Hey, everybody, and excuse my rudeness. I was like on the phone and back and forth, and so I'd really love to hear more of your story from the little bit of the beginning. but it sounded very interesting. And so I'm here on behalf of Edward Bedalian. He is a J6th defendant, but I think, you know, he was our defender. You know, he was out there on J6 just to give you guys, the new people, a little bit of a just. And last time we were here, we gave a little spiel on what he was going through then, and it was, he was out and he was with me, and he had his ankle monitor, unfortunately. And then we, of course, left to go to D.C. for his hearing, his sentencing. So we were there for sentencing, thinking he was going to come home. The thought was, he's coming home 60 days, and he's going to turn himself in. That's not how things went in D.C., I will tell you. We were, you know, anxious for the day. He didn't eat a whole lot, you know, the night before. He was obviously really stressed out. The next morning was a little even crazier. You know, I needed to run to the store, and I came back, and we didn't hug or kiss that morning. And then, you know, we went right into court, and then, of course, they got into it, and, you know, there was a little back and forth. He didn't get to say a whole lot. That's kind of how court goes. You know, if you've, you know, been even in court for a speeding ticket, you know, you're just supposed to respect the judge, and you're supposed to, you know, only have that little bit of time to respond to one specific question. You know, he did get to testify in the trial, but the trial, you know, you can't really tell the entire story in, like, you know, the bit of time that you get. And even so, it's not clear in your head to the point where you share every single detail. So, you know, during the sentencing, you know, the things were brought up that he disagreed with. There were things that they were lying about. And, you know, as she got up there to give his sentence, and actually we had a nice break. It was like 45 minutes. Or no, actually, it was probably shorter than that. It was like 20 minutes. And I was talking to a woman behind me, you know, so we didn't. And then he was with his lawyer, so we still had no connection during that time. And, you know, she got back, and she sat in her seat, and she just spewed like all these hateful lies. And I even felt it from the audience, and I just wanted to speak up. But, you know, there's one marshal, you know, behind me, and then a woman who was actually the wife of the gentleman who had the very first J6 trial. And that's a whole nother crazy story. He's in for 7 years and definitely doesn't deserve to be. His 18-year-old liberal son turned him in. Family drama, et cetera. Horrible, horrible. so she comes back to give the sentencing, spewing all of that, and he could not let her lie. He couldn't hold his composure. Sorry, I'm trying to, like, keep it together. He couldn't hold his composure, and I felt for him because it was like, how do you let someone lie about you up there on the record? So he he knows what he's doing. He knew what was happening in that moment, and that this was supposed to be part of the record, supposed to be part of the fight, you know, and he knew he was going. So, sorry. I've only told this story a million times to 50 million different people on the phone. and it still doesn't get easier. I went by myself, so I didn't actually have anybody other than that woman. And so he cut her off like 20 times. And if you read the transcript, of course, you know, you can see everything they said to each other, but you will never feel the intensity that was going on in that room. And she was screaming, you know, to his lawyer, make your, you know, client shut up or I will. Just kind of welling up in tears herself, you know, as they were going back and forth. And it just, there's so much bias in everything that she said. There's so many, you know, so much emotion in the things that she had to say about him. It was clear that she hated Edward. She said he's grandiose. She said, you know, and I'm not trying to make it any harder for him because, you know, he has to, of course, go and appeal. He gets three different judges. And, you know, but though if that does not work, he has to obviously go back to see. But I don't regret anything that I've said because I feel like it's insanely unfair, everything that's happened. All that she said was I understand, you know, they're able to take facts from here and from here and from here and make a narrative of their own and maybe, you know, tell it so many times that they believe it's true themselves. But I just need to keep speaking out and getting better at this and, you know, really putting his story out there and talking about it constantly, because those are lies and that is not who he is. And he's not, he doesn't think he's smarter than everyone else. And she, you know, thought he was trying to show off by saying he attended the Leadership Institute and then he was trying to promote, like, healthy protesting, you know, and he was, and they, you know, caught him in a motion to the cops, you know, when he tried to, of course, get them to cooperate with him, you know, and so it's just the passion of being rejected and knowing all of what's going on in your government and that you don't have the help of your police force behind you. You know, they're so hung up on the fact that he thinks that they say he can arrest traitors by himself. You know, there's so many news. There's so many things out there saying that he was just going to go in and get Nancy Pelosi and grab her by her arm and, you know, take her herself. You know, it's posse comitatus. He was really trying to do this the right way. But so that back and forth, back to the court date, that back and forth ended in, obviously, him going in right away. Very dramatic. You know, he had to take off his tie and his belt and his shoelaces and everything right then and there and hand them to me. Well, actually, he tried to hand them to me and they, like, you know, scorned him quite hard. Because he wasn't allowed anywhere near me. That's the breakdown process. They want you to immediately feel like you're theirs. And so,
Kaylin, can you tell us?
Sorry if it's a jumbled mess.
What was the sentence that they handed down?
The sentence ended up being 51 months. He's in there. And then 36 months of probation and 100 hours of community service, like that was necessary. But just, of course, you know, any little thing that they can get you on.
And can you also say what were the actual charges that he was convicted of?
Yeah, so conspiracy, I thought was the biggest one. Honestly, it ended up being obstruction of an official court proceeding that all of these guys are fighting. And hopefully there is some light at the end of the tunnel, because there is stuff out there that they're saying, you know, we're only just entering appeals. Things are happening now. Everyone had their chance for a trial. Now they're moving to appeals. And, you know, the lawyer that I'm fighting really hard for to fundraise an extra few thousand dollars, I actually I took my savings and I you know, pulled from his family and made awkward calls and called everybody in my cell phone and was able to gather, you know, a decent bit of this. And Nick Smith is his new attorney, hopefully here in the next week I'll be able to obtain that. And or two, we have till the 2nd, that's his appearance, so you guys know, his first appearance in front of three judges for the appeal, I think. It's all a learning process. Like, seriously, this is all information I learned like 2 days ago or 3 days ago, and it's overwhelming to not have, you know, I have you guys, which, you know, at these events I feel so connected and kind of at home. I don't have my family here. His family's here, but that's also super hard because they're going through the loss of someone as well. But we're in the process of preparing for the appeal, and then we'll make the appeal. But there's maybe exciting things happening in December with a Supreme Court case that the same attorney does have. So I feel pretty excited about this man, and hopefully that's, you know, I feel like God has also spoken. I'm not religious, but I'm not religious. I've always been open. But, you know, people keep asking me, like, do you have faith? And I say, well, I'm definitely gonna here super soon, because it just pushes you there.
Can I ask you a couple of questions? Do you feel that the whole process that they put you through is punishment in and of itself. And have your funds been completely depleted by this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, beyond. Like, I'm learning about, his family members are asking me, like, I don't even have the money to go visit him. And I'm, now informing them, like, there's a company called Love Wins, and they pay for your travel, and, I've already applied. And that's what I mean about our community, is that they're pulling together, and that's right. The amazing part.
Right.
But yes, they're just, trying to find every avenue to suck us dry.
They wouldn't allow you to change the venue to Los Angeles, and they forced you to go to Washington, D.C. for all your hearings, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had to do
that. And, of course, you had to pay for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, Edward has a lot of people that love him, but at the same time, I'm not sure how vocal he was with his friends, but maybe not his family, in the political world. So they don't understand, his right. mom anytime that she has the opportunity to speak with one of us patriots, and someone mentions Trump, she just, she's just like, I'm so angry. He brought him there, and he said, and she just doesn't understand that this fight is so necessary, unfortunately, for us to go through this to bring that in to the public eye.
So the way I see this is you were put up against federal prosecutors and a well-oiled judicial machine with literally no experience at all.
Yeah, and they
on
don't,
your side. And you were denied a change of venue, and you were forced to pay for all these back-and-forth trips. So, in my opinion, the process has become the punishment. So that's what's happening to Ammon Bundy and now to James O'Keefe and multiple other people. They're using the so-called justice system as a weapon against people.
The objective, super slow justice system.
And the objective is to deplete your funds and defeat your ability to defend yourself. And I think it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. So I just want you to know that we're with you and we're with Edward. And I know that this whole proceeding has been just a travesty, a disgusting travesty. Mm-hmm. And I am disgusted by the judiciary and the people involved in doing this to him. So we'll try to help you the best we can. And in that effort, I would like to get you connected with Trennis Evans, one of our previous speakers. So let's talk, and we'll get you his contact details and get in touch with him. Because he's like these wonderful folks. He's organizing for the whole group of the J6ers. So they're organizing for the federal employees, and Trennis is organizing for the J6ers.
Awesome.
So just want you to know that we love you, and we're going to do everything we can to help you, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't mind me speaking on the record, just still, a little bit more about his experience in there, too. They had him in isolation for 9 days because of COVID restrictions, right? So he was stuck in his cell and didn't even get to leave for the first couple of days, his cell at all. He has, the little food slot. They put your food in there. Mm-hmm. Small enough, I think, 2 beds. It's like a detention center. It's for, the drunk tank or whatever. It's, supposed to be temporary. 9 whole days in there before he got moved to the J6 pod. Mm-hmm. And barely any water, honestly. He said he was super dehydrated for a while. He built himself like a little punching bag out of clothes, so he could just really just kind of get out what he needed and not, put it out on anyone else to behave himself in there. And then, thankfully, the J6 pod is a bit better, just in case anyone out there wants to know that he's doing a bit better than he was.
So he was in isolation for 9 days?
Yeah.
So Amnesty International considers isolation of more than 48 hours to be torture.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know.
Yeah, it needs to be told to everyone listening.
Mm-hmm.
He is, you know, he was able to watch the Steeler game today. He tried to call me. I'm from Pittsburgh. So he said, you know, did you want to watch the Steeler game together? And I was, you know, I'd get a call in the beginning, of course, and then we'd watch it. And then he'd call me at the end to talk about it. But that is like the first, or he got to watch the wrestling match in the center as well, mm-hmm. The rec center. And, you know, that's like the first thing that he's really gotten that was nice. Their food is crap. You know, I'm trying to find an avenue. I guess there's a way you can order nicer food from my end that I can get sent to right. him, you know. But it's all just, they make it so hard to contact him, to see him, to, you know, everything's just feels like torture. Yeah.
Yeah. Could you finish, was it only those two charges that he was convicted of?
Oh, and then trespassing, which is the misdemeanor.
Okay.
So conspiracy, obstruction of an official court proceeding, and trespassing. But if they get rid of an obstruction of an official court proceeding, then actually the conspiracy is the conspiracy to commit, I believe, the obstruction of an official court proceeding. So hopefully right. when that goes away, they all go away. You know, because actually there's no trespassing law for the Capitol other than what Mike Pence was in there. You know, and so that's just that area. And right. that wasn't even where he was. Right. You know, so they really shouldn't be able to give that to him either.
So just to get this on the record, Edward was attempting to stop Antifa from destroying the Capitol. And he's seen on film doing this. And yet the court found it reasonable to convict him of a conspiracy to stop the vote count
mm-hmm.
And the vote certification process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that in itself is ridiculous. That's
well, you can't even say
flagrantly
like
on its face, flagrantly on its face, a lie. So I just wanted to say that on your behalf. That's completely ridiculous. To prove a conspiracy, you have to do a little more than just say so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're not doing that. But you know, I just can't express enough how unfair I think this is to put people through this kind of a process. And they know full well in the court system, they know full well that people do not understand their language. They don't understand the process. They don't understand anything about what they're getting into. And they take complete advantage of that. And I think in Edward's case, one of the most egregious offenses they committed was they didn't allow a change of venue
mm-hmm.
so you could have your hearings near to your home.
Yeah.
Okay. And the only reason, there's two reasons I think they did that, is I think the January 6th committee has control of that judge
mm-hmm.
that's in D.C., and they know that judge will go along with their lies. And number two, to deplete you of your ability to defend yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're going to make sure that we get some kind of punishment, no matter, you know, if we end up not guilty in the end. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Right. Well, we've had several defendants from J6 here now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Derek Kennison is one. Trennis Evans, who is now organizing on behalf of the January 6ers. And Edward
mm-hmm.
all tell basically the same story. They did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And these charges are just fabrications.
Absolutely.
It's ridiculous. There was no insurrection. But, Kaylin, just from your heart, how can we help you?
I mean, obviously, the GoFundMe. The Give, Send, Go page is... givesendgo.com/help free Edward Bedallion. That's obviously appreciated. So anything helps. I'm just getting out there and speaking at multiple events and, you know, just like people like you, I'll be in Beverly Hills or I'll be, you know, and it's just, like I said, a learning process. So hopefully all goes well. So prayers for me on my end, my sanity, my sleep would be good. I feel like there was, you know, there was always so much to be said, and that could be in individual conversations, but I would just say keep doing what you're doing, because, you know, that part's important, and this is my part, and Edward being in there, that's his part, unfortunately. but there are, and I don't know why, and I don't want to, like, you know, link the jail to start thinking about this, but, you know, a lot of our able-bodied Patriot men are together in those prisons, and they're also, you know, talking, right, and, you know, not stopping the fight, right, either. So we have to keep them educated. Write him letters. I mean, I can, you know, give that information to Adam, and he can send that. He would love it. Just absolutely, communication. He's just such a, you know, talkative bee.
We can
and
do
he
that.
Would love it. Yeah.
We can do that. Can you tell me one more thing? Just so everybody here can learn this term. Can you tell me what diesel therapy is, please?
Did I talk to you about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I was fortunate enough, like I said, the woman came in and these women educated me on all this stuff. But one thing called diesel therapy, I guess they start moving you from prison to prison and make sure that you never get settled. And that you can't bring anything with you, so you cannot have socks, underwear, anything that you bought in the previous place. You leave everything and have to rebuy it. And so they, you know, get you with your money there, and him just never having a place to call home and not making new friends. You know, that's going to be part of this process probably. As soon as they're done with his appeal, I'm hoping all this goes a way different way and it's so much better, but you know, he's going to eventually leave D.C., and then he'll get bused to probably Oklahoma is where everyone goes, at least. It's the middle. It's where everyone kind of makes their direction. And then hopefully Lompoc is a couple hours from me. I'm in Canoga Park, so it's a little closer to me. But it's going to be a while until he gets there. His lawyer says, you know, at least 6 months till we get, like, real things moving. And then, you know, a year is the appeal time process average. So a year he's going to be either in there or I'm pretty sure he said he wants to personally stay in D.C., you know, for that, because he's just all linked in now. And, like, if he can just go through the appeal, then he'll go through it there, you know. I mean, I think he's starting to settle with certain things and just know that. I'm just trying to keep him calm on my end, you know, so
right.
I think he's settled with certain things, yeah.
So I wanted to add to what she said about diesel therapy, because diesel therapy was done to Ammon Bundy, our founder. He was held in solitary confinement for one full year, and he hadn't been through his trial yet, so he hadn't even been convicted. So they tortured that man for a year. Mm-hmm. And part of the torture was diesel therapy. So they put you on a bus to change your location, and they manacle you to the seat. And then they drive for 16, 18 hours at a time, and they don't allow you to get up. So prisoners get blood clots in the back of their legs that travel to their heart and kill them. So that's what diesel therapy is. All the people inside these prisons are sadistic, and they like to torture prisoners. So that's what diesel therapy is. I just want to say, you know, I'm ashamed of my country. I'm ashamed that those judges are even judges.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed of the whole January 6th committee and the whole travesty. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting. But someone else wants to say something. So. Oh, okay.
Oh, battery.
Let him change this, and then
okay.
You can finish up. Can you say that one more time? Who is the judge again?
Amy Berman Jackson is the judge, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of corruptness within these judges, and you can just blatantly see it. It's just so obvious, and it's mm-hmm. That's the disgusting part, is that they just push forward, and they're like, yep, we're corrupt, but, you know, you have no capability to defend yourself.
Right. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would, if you find it within your hearts to do so, we're doing a little collection for Edward's defense and his appeal. And Jane will be collecting for that, and she's right over there. So anything you can give towards that would be really appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate you listening and hearing my update. Hopefully we'll have better news soon.
Thank you, Kaylin. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, if you could, please take your seats. We are getting a call directly from Edward Bedalian. So please take your seats and stop your conversations for a moment, please. So this will be Edward speaking from prison.
Okay, can you hear me, Edward?
Yes.
Okay, I think you just need to turn him up a tiny bit, maybe.
Can you hear me? Testing.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead and talk to everybody. We're all here.
Hello, everyone. This is Edward from the BC Gulag, as it's affectionately known. So I guess the first thing I would like to talk about is the condition that are here. Before
I did speak on it a little bit for them, but go ahead.
Yeah, so when they bring people in here, they do what's called a quarantine, and it's no longer really targeted at J6ers because so many J6ers are basically suing the jail. And so now they just do it to everybody. They torture essentially everyone with this under this quarantine regime where they tell you, oh, you know, we'll see you in 3 days, 2 days. But then it took, for my example, it took 8 days for them to finally move me, and some people even 2 weeks. And what happens is, they want to make sure that everyone stays over the weekend, because what they do on the weekend is from Friday 9 p.m. all the way to Monday 9 p.m., you don't get out of your cell. So it's 72 hours of voluntary, maximum security lockdown, where you're basically fed through a slot and barely get any water, so you're dehydrated. Everyone was dehydrated. But there's a lot of camaraderie in there, so I don't know what they were trying to do by, because they separate every J6er and they say, oh, you're protective custody, and then everyone else is Gen Pop. So they try to create the separation and enforce the separation in the jail. Divide and conquer, obviously. But so what ended up happening was I would go and speak to my little rec time that I had. I would go and speak to the other, medium security, maximum security, criminal people, and everyone, Black, Mexican, white—it's just everyone's pro Trump, and they're all pro, standing by the January 6ers, and they're just excited that we're here, and they're "You guys changed the jail. The conditions were way worse before, and now they're finally improving because you're actually holding them to standard and American standard." Yeah. So, everyone is pro Trump here. So I don't know if that makes them happy or not, but yeah, but they torture everybody. They don't torture the J6ers. Every inmate that comes in has to basically go through maximum security hell for a while before they're moved into a normal housing unit. So now I've moved into the J6 housing unit, which is all J6ers. So it's interesting here to have the conversations and basically, for lack of a better term, planning what we're going to do in the court system and in the political system to fight back against this evil corruption. So I just want to let you guys know that, we're not giving up in here. Everyone in here, no one in here is sad and mopey and have self-pity. And no, we're still in the fight for this soul of this country. And so the message that I try to put out from here always is that don't get disheartened. Don't see what they're doing to us and then let it hurt your morale.
Oddly enough, I just gave that same message here.
Well, yeah. Edward, this is Adam Ruff. Can you hear me?
Yes, Adam.
Okay, I just want you to know that we're with you, brother. And we don't want you to give up, because we're going to fight on your behalf from here. And there's about 25 of us here. And just want you to know that we love you, brother.
Thank you. I love you guys, too. I will never stop fighting for this cause, for righteousness, of trying to bring light and truth back to America.
Well, I'm ashamed that you're... I'm ashamed that you're stuck in that gulag, and we're going to do everything we can to help you, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. And so I just wanted to say also, you know, there's a lot of Democrats that, you know, are open to this, to siding with us over this, because if you remember, the polls showed that 10 to 20% of Democrats would not have voted for Joe Biden if they knew the Hunter Biden laptop was real. So we have to drive a truck through that. We have to win over as many Democrats as we can, too, because they don't like warmongers, and Biden is a warmonger. As soon as he got into office, wars started popping up all over the place. He undid all of the peace deals and good work that Trump did to bring peace to the Middle East, bring peace in Ukraine, bring peace in Taiwan and North Korea, and now that immediately Biden got in, weak American president that's controlled by the powers that like to go to war, boom, wars broke out all over the place. And now it's getting even worse. Iran is now basically attacking Israel. And that could potentially start World War III. And lo and behold, Joe Biden was the one who refunded Iran immediately after getting into office. So the blood of those Israeli children and women and children that were just murdered is on Biden's hand.
Well, Edward, can you tell us a little bit more about what the conditions are like? And can you tell me from your perspective what diesel therapy is?
Yes. Okay. So what they do is, to certain people, I guess, that they feel so threatened by because we're so evil, is they will move people around prison so they can't get settled or comfortable anywhere. And it's essentially, that's what's called, like, diesel therapy. It's like, they drive you around to torture you. You can't ever make any real friends, and you can't, you never get settled in. So currently, they're doing that to my co-defendant, Daniel Rodriguez. He was here, and then they moved him to another jail, and then they moved him to, I think, and then they moved him to Pennsylvania, and then to, now to downtown L.A., and then they're going to finally move him to Lompoc. So, like, four different prisons or whatever. So that's like a torture method. There was another guy who was in my same quarantine cell. He should be coming up here on Monday. He came in a little bit later after me. So he's currently going through that 72-hour torture lockdown downstairs, Curtis Tate. They had already done diesel therapy to him. So this is like his fourth prison in the matter of months since being arrested. And he could tell that it was affecting him. It was like he missed his friends that he met in the other jail. And
learn how to be alone.
Have you faced any abuse at the hands of any guards?
Actually, yeah. So some guards are rude. Even when I'm respectful to them, they're rude. This guy named Chioma, I don't say his name openly. He's just screaming at me for no reason. And then I listen to him, and then he goes, "Oh, you're going to be a problem here." And I'm like, "No, I'm not. Everything you tell me, like, I just immediately do it." Like,
continuing the narrative.
Out of pocket, disrespectful for no reason. Yeah, but other than him, most CEOs have been respectful. Some of them were even, like, going to vote Trump. Like, they were not against it at all. You know, at the end of the day, they don't want their children being turned trans in the schools, and they don't want to see gay pride parades with children dancing with adults throwing money on them. Like, most of the correctional officers here are actually African immigrants, and the countries they come from are highly conservative. So they're all, like, about conservatism and family values and religious principles. So So there's a whole transformation going on here in this jail because of basically because of what they're trying to do. They tried to torture us, but we're flipping it around on them. Everyone is pro-Trump now.
Hey, Ed, we have another question.
If you could send a message to Trump, President Trump, what message would you tell him?
I would tell him to not avoid us. I don't know why he's avoiding us. I mean, like, you know, this is what I said in my interview with Ryan J. Riley when he asked me what my message for Trump was. I'm like, look, I know we're like ragtag and we're not like sophisticated like the people that you're usually hanging around with, but our hearts are in the right place. Trust us. Trust us. We are really your friends. Like he only did Alex Jones's show one time. No, go back and do it again and reconnect with your grassroots. Like, we are your people. And like when the left, you know, they have like actual terrorists who target police, conspire to attack police, federal police. And then they're all the celebrities on the left, like, fund millions and millions and millions of dollars for their legal fees. Okay, we don't need millions of dollars. But it would be nice to see, you know, some support from the top down so we wouldn't have to rely on pure grassroots work, because that's not right. To, you know, the rich Republicans should also be stepping up. I mean, come on. And we didn't even target police, or we weren't even trying to, like, do what Antifa does. We were trying to stop a crime. We're being criminalized. So it's righteous to try to help us. I mean, come on.
That would be my message to him.
Yeah.
So, Edward, is there anything you would like to say just to the American people? Because we'll broadcast it for you, okay?
Yeah, I would like to say that both Democrats and Republicans, we can stand together against warmonger Biden and promote and fight for Trump, because he did bring peace to the world, and he can do it again. If you don't want to see innocent people dying all over the world in wars, let's get Trump back in office.
Even through means of Speaker of the House.
Yeah. So I don't know if you know this, Edward, but President Trump pardoned the Hammonds, who were the focus of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge occupation. So President Trump felt that they were unjustly punished, and he pardoned them. So I'm not saying that there's any guarantees of him getting in office or doing that, but I think he does hear you. And I just want you to be strong, brother. So go ahead. You got the floor for the rest of your time.
Yeah. So I think that the reason why a lot of us have kept up the fight, that we didn't just roll over when the DOJ came for us, that we were going to fight tooth and nail at every step, because it's not a guarantee that Trump gets back in office. It's not a guarantee that we get pardoned. But it is a guarantee that we're not going to go quietly into the night, that the devil will not swallow us alive and digest us. The devil will regurgitate this. This will not come to pass. And righteousness and justice will be served in the end.
Amen.
Well, thank you, brother. Stay strong, okay? We love you, man.
Thank you. I'll stay strong for you guys. Thank you, guys. I love you, guys.
All right, so that concludes our meeting, folks. Feel free to mingle and have some fun.